ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
So when I say apex scavenger, who, I suppose, or what do you think of, Priya?
Oh, I thought you were going to ask apex predator, if I'm being honest, in which case I think of T-Rex, but my five-year-old's in his dinosaur phase.
Yes.
Scavenger. That's interesting. Are we talking goannas and lizards?
No. So the scavengers are the animals who eat carcasses, eat dead things.
Okay.
Rather than live animals. And they clear the environment of dead stuff. And apex scavengers are the biggest ones who do it.
So what's an example of an apex scavenger?
A hyena.
A hyena, okay.
Or a vulture. And some would say a great white shark.
Okay.
What we've got coming up on the Health Report is a fascinating interview on how we need apex scavengers more than we think, and they are extremely threatened.
A slightly different angle on the Health Report today.
We've never done one of these animal stories. We should do more of them. They're good fun.
That's coming up on the Health Report. I'm Priya Alexander on Wurundjeri Land.
And I'm Norman Swan on Gadigal Land for the first time in a couple of weeks. Also on the show, as I said earlier, hyenas, vultures, great white sharks, all apex scavengers. Who would have thought that their being endangered endangers us?
And genetic carrier screening is a test that should be offered to everybody, either preconception or in early pregnancy, but there's still many people who don't even know about it.
Yeah, an important story that we're returning to. And how to reduce the need for knee replacement surgery by understanding your pain. It's fascinating, and we talked to somebody who actually walked the Camino Trail after being told his knees were so bad he needed artificial joints.
First in the news, we've got some big changes that have been announced in Australia when it comes to blood donation. From the 14th of July this year, the rules are going to change because currently men who are gay, bisexual or transgender women who have sex with men cannot donate blood or plasma if they've had any sex in the past 3 months. That's all going to change from the 14th of July, and it's going to be easier for people in the LGBTQIA plus community to donate blood and plasma.
This has been a huge issue since the early days of the HIV/AIDS pandemic, where people feel stigmatised, excluded. It's a community that wants to help other people, and they haven't been able to, and they've often wondered whether or not it's still valid to be worried about HIV/AIDS in the blood supply when we've got testing, when there's less HIV around, and so on. And this policy, which I think is a world first, aims to rationalise that.
Really, Australia is going to have the world first ever plasma pathway policy, which now means that most people can now donate plasma immediately, regardless of their sexual activity. But I think from a practical point of view, things are going to change when you go in to donate blood or plasma, regardless of your gender, sexuality. Everyone's going to be asked a certain set of questions in order to determine whether or not they're suitable to immediately donate blood, plasma, or which kind of triage they can go into.
So what would they be asked?
So they're going to be asked if they've had sex in the last 6 months with a new partner or more than one partner, and that's excluding oral sex. If they say yes to any of those questions, then they're asked if they've had anal sex in the last 3 months. If they say yes to that, then they have to defer blood donation, that's standard blood donation, for 6 months because there's a higher risk of transmission of HIV with anal sex, but they can still be eligible to donate plasma.
So that sounds a bit contradictory. What's the story with plasma that makes it safer?
So this particular pathway, the plasma is only going to be used for medicine manufacturing, not for plasma infusions. And so the plasma, when it's used to make medicines, has less strict donation rules because they have extra techniques that kill any viruses and bacteria that might be in the plasma. So that's why people don't need to wait and they can proceed and donate immediately. But the amazing thing with this and the change in rules is that the Lifeblood Chief Medical Officer has said they anticipate an extra 24,000 donors and 95,000 extra donations of plasma to be made each year, which is amazing.
It is amazing because we need all the donations we can get. Also, diversity in the community is important because there's more than just the standard blood groups, and the more diversity we get in the blood supply, the better.
That's right. Next in the news is a new report that's come out from the Grattan Institute, which has revealed a lot of information about private specialists, and some of them are charging up to 3 times the Medicare fee for their services. So 1 in 10 patients are nearly $600 out of pocket for an appointment.
Yeah, and you'd know this well from your referral pattern. No doubt you've got the odd person coming back saying, why did you refer me to that person? I'm $500 out of pocket. So it's a common situation. Hard to see an allergist these days for under $500, if you can get to see an allergist at all. Some psychiatrists are charging $900 for ADHD assessment and so on. It's a difficult issue. And my view of the Grattan report, I mean, I did a Four Corners on this several years ago, out-of-pocket expenditure, which is enormous in Australia. We're one of the world's highest out-of-pockets. The Commonwealth government started a website for specialists to declare their fees. And the problem with that is, and this was something that happened in the world of business, as soon as you had listed companies having to declare what their chief executives earned, chief executives' salaries started to go up because people said, oh, if an orthopaedic surgeon's charging that in Adelaide, well, I should be charging that too. Or if a cardiologist around the corner from me is charging that, well, I could be charging that too. I've only been charging $500 out of pocket for a prostate removal and somebody else is charging $20,000 out of pocket. Well, why shouldn't I be doing the same and making more money? And the complication here is it's a private market, so people can charge what they like in this environment, and very hard to get through it in a policy sense.
From a practical point of view, this is what I'm living in. Many GPs are living in the consulting room. You can't possibly know what every non-GP specialist charges. I actually went onto the site you mentioned, the Medicare Cost Finder website, very difficult to navigate. And that's, of course, the site that came up in election time where the government said they were going to give $24 million to upgrade it.
Yes, but it tends to be for procedural specialists, like surgeons and so on, rather than physicians who charge you for consultations. Now, on the surgical side, insurance, health insurance companies do have lists of surgeons who charge a no gap or a fixed gap, so that you can choose a surgeon who's got a no gap or a fixed gap. And if a surgeon does that, they get an extra rebate from the health insurance company in return for doing that. So they do make some more money from it. It probably doesn't fully compensate them for charging whatever they liked. There is the odd surgeon who will charge you an under-the-counter and probably illegal fee for administration. Sometimes that can be $5,000. So it's lots of things that go on in this environment. But the real issue here is people accessing subspecialist expertise beyond their GP specialist in various areas, obstetrics, gynecology, dermatology, allergy, and so on.
I have lots of patients who will come and see me, Norman, and let's use you as an example, who need to see a cardiologist. And I might say to you, look, I'm going to refer you into the public system, which can often mean a really long waiting time, which is another thing the Grattan report talks about, the really long waiting times in the public system. Now, there's often still a wait to see a private specialist, but the costs are a serious barrier. And the report says that nearly 2 million Australians are delaying or skipping specialist care because of the fee. So it has significant consequences. People potentially sit on their issue, don't get the interventions they need. The report has talked about all sorts of potential recommendations, and that's been met with very mixed responses from the AMA, who said some of the recommendations go too far. The RACGP says some of them look good, like the ability for GPs like myself to get written advice from a non-GP specialist so my patient doesn't need to pay and wait to see them. So that could potentially...
There still needs to be a fee for the specialist's time, though, wouldn't there?
Well, how does the GP and the specialist get remunerated? That's, you know, apparently the federal government are considering it and talking through the options there. But something has to shift here. People can't pay $600 out of pocket to go and see a non-GP specialist. That's a serious barrier.
So I think the Grattan report suggests maybe removing the ability to charge on Medicare.
If they're charging excessive fees, yeah.
Then you've got to decide, well, what's an excessive fee? That will probably end up in a high court challenge, because in 1948, there was a court case which was over the pharmaceutical benefits scheme, where doctors didn't want to write scripts on the pharmaceutical benefits scheme. It sounds extraordinary to hear this now.
Yeah.
And doctors won that case, and the basis was that they couldn't be forced to write scripts on the pharmaceutical benefits scheme. Doctors, well, the AMA has considered that decision, in fact, government has considered that decision to be much more widely applicable than it probably is, and nobody has tested it since 1948. So the assumption is we can't force doctors to do anything. They've got complete freedom to do whatever they like, unless, of course, it's illegal or dangerous, but particularly in terms of fees. So that's a barrier. So it's probably about time that we did have a high court challenge to that. because it's paralysed policy in this area. One solution might be more competition in the public sector, which is kind of where the Grattan report was going, that we should have better access to non-GP specialists in the public sector.
It's very hard on the ground as well. I think we agree we need more transparency ideally. This is a very complex situation, and I think for people listening, you can call around and find out the fees of the non-GP specialist you're going to see. As a GP, I try really hard to be on top of it, but it's very difficult. It's very, very difficult.
In the old days,
when the apex predator T-Rex was roaming.
That's right. They were very dangerous in Scotland. But in the old days in Australia, GPs would sometimes refer to a private specialist and say, I'm referring Mrs. Jones to you, who's got a sore knee. She's on a pension card and I bulk bill her. I'd really appreciate it if you would bulk bill her. Does that ever happen now?
It occasionally occurs, but you call those favours in very, very preciously, Norman. Trust me. I keep them up my sleeve when absolutely needed.
Right.